Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. In my opinion, another above-average episode of Monday Night Raw, which really makes me shake my head at what we saw Friday on SmackDown. Now, this Raw was not without its flaws, and there were a few that I consider very, very critical flaws. But while it did have its flaws, it also had its moments that made you anticipate next week, made you anticipate beyond Extreme Rules, which, thank you, whoever has decided that this is a good idea, thank you. I know it's the go-home show for Extreme Rules. I know you're building up to a pay-per-view, but I don't know why, for the last year and a half to 2 years, the objective seemed to be to make this seem like the only thing in the world that matters, and anything past it doesn't matter at all. It's crucial that things past this event matter. And I think the WWE did a pretty good job last night of showing a little bit of that. So we're going to get right into it. But before we do, a couple of small pieces of news. One is that apparently, now that Kevin Owens is back to work, word has come out that Kevin Owens was one of the people, if not the only person, who confronted Vince McMahon and said, I want there to be certain regulations. The masks have to be taken seriously, and this has to happen, and that has to happen. And apparently Vince McMahon acquiesced to those demands, so Kevin Owens decided he would grace us with his presence. Well, he's being heralded as a hero, and I'm saying that he's a chucklehead. And the reason he's a chucklehead is because, Kevin, you're working behind plexiglass. Those people in the audience, they're not touching you. They're not breathing on you. Maybe you should just petition for put plexiglass around the ring and put a door. And then we can all wrestle in a plexiglass ring, surrounded by plexiglass, where there's absolutely no chance that anything could ever, even air, for the most part, can even get in. Kevin, I understand that you've suffered a family loss due to COVID. But you have to understand that whether or not one person behind a quarter-inch plexiglass 65 feet away from you is going to make a difference of whether you're safe or not is ludicrous. It's ludicrous. You know, just as an example, I live in New York, which is one of the worst infected, areas. I go in to return my cans and bottles like a good little recycler does, and there's no one in there wearing a mask. No workers. It says we have to. So just out of curiosity, not because I care, I said to the girl, that's very odd. You guys don't have to wear masks. And she points to a big sign that says our workers are not required to wear masks. Why? COVID doesn't attack you? COVID doesn't live here? See, here's the problem. If you have to acquiesce to every single wrestler's demands, maybe some of them are going to be different. Well, I demand this. Well, I demand that. We can't keep doing this. You don't want to work, don't work. If COVID has hit your family hard and you believe you're not safe, don't come to work. That's the answer. But don't demand that everyone that does live up to your expectations, because then you're being a chucklehead who thinks that you know more than everybody else, and you don't. Where's your medical degree? Would you like me to point you out to a doctor named Dr. Scott Atlas, who has a very, very large medical degree, who says you're full of shit? Everyone should be comfortable in their workplace. I get it. But then that's the emphasis is on Kevin Owens. Then Kevin Owens should say, well, listen, here's what I want. I want my own dressing room, even if it's a broom closet. If someone comes up to me backstage, I do want them wearing a mask because I'm uncomfortable. I'll walk down to the ring without one, obviously, and as long as the plexiglass is up, and I'll wrestle the guys in the ring that's been tested, and then I'm going straight home. That's all. Then it only affects you. Then you're saying, look, this is my thing. This is my hang-up. I remember playing clubs, and cigarette smoke bothers my voice tremendously. Okay? If I'm around in a club for 20 minutes, and back then you could have, and even now to a certain degree, they let people smoke. In New York, it's supposed to be banned, but please. It bothers me. It weakens my voice. I never insisted, well, if I'm going to play here, every single person has to be told they cannot smoke or they have to smoke outdoors and because that bothers me. I just said, well, I'm going to have to stay outdoors. I'm going to have to stay outdoors until a couple minutes before showtime because I can't breathe this in. See, because the emphasis is on me. It's not on everyone else to make me comfortable. It's on me to do what I have to do to be comfortable. If Kevin Owens requires special needs, then that's fine. But then the special needs shouldn't affect everyone else. He has to then figure out what he needs to do. So that's my rant on the Kevin Owens thing, Mike. I really don't think the WWE should have to change their entire structure of everything just to bring one guy back to work.
No. And look, it's not like one. You're diving into the crowd. You have a full crowd, and you're diving into the crowd, you know. You got that piece of plexiglass off, and, you know, you're going to – in fact, the guys have basically used that plexiglass as a weapon at times. So, yeah. Okay, the matches they've been having kind of feels like a hockey game type thing, you know.
Yeah.
At times. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, you're right. If he, if he's making a request and Vince is going to say, okay, I'll do that, but you're going to get is a room closet and he agrees to it, fine. I'm fine with it. Now, he can't be crying every time, you know. Wah, I want that. This better be the only time he does this.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I can't say, well, I went back to catering and there's unhealthy food there. And I don't want unhealthy food there. I think it's bad for people's health. And even though I don't have to eat it, other people are eating it and I think it's bad for them and I don't want them to get sick. Therefore, I don't want unhealthy food back there. You can't control other people. If there's someone in that audience who doesn't feel like they need to wear a mask, then you let the other people in the audience control it and say, then we're not coming. Or you can't come in. Just tell them they can't come in. But the bottom line of the situation is you can't control other people's thoughts. There are people who smoke. It's not healthy for you. It's not good. There are people who eat constantly off of fast food. It's not good for you. There are people who do a lot of things that aren't good for your health. But you can't stop them from doing it because you think it's not good for them. All you can do is try to protect yourself. Well, the plexiglass is up for you, Kevin. Backstage, you can control who you're around and where you're around and what you're wearing. That's for you. But you can't control that person 45 feet away from you behind plexiglass because it's not fair. Because that person may not have the same view as you do. So anyway, I mean, listen, he's back. And we'll get to why I think it was a nightmare and he should have stayed gone. But we'll get to that in a moment. Let's start right out here with the opening segment, which is MVP, who always does a good job. Now, with his beginning shtick with the "for people better than you," I that's gotten old a long time ago. Should come up with something better than that. But he's very good at what he does. I've said it before. I'll say it again. A huge, huge addition to Raw has been MVP as a manager and as a mouthpiece. Huge addition. He brings out Dolph Ziggler, who was always good on the mic. And together they aggravate Drew McIntyre enough so that Drew McIntyre comes out. Now, the bottom line of the situation with this is you can promote this match any way you want. It's not an interesting match because there is no one, and I mean no one, who thinks Dolph Ziggler has even a 1% chance of walking out with that title. This is a warm-up match for Randy Orton, who we know that's coming. And under no circumstances is Dolph Ziggler winning this belt. Nor this match. He's not winning by DQ. He's not winning by countout. They're not stretching it out. This is a victory for Drew McIntyre on his way to Randy Orton. So you can say what you want. You can do what you want. It's all pointless at this point because you've got someone in that ring who, while I think he's very talented, has not been utilized correctly to make anyone think that he is of title shot caliber. Or anyone think that he could potentially take the belt even for a day. So therefore, it's almost worthless. It's all just lip service. But they did an okay job. Drew McIntyre ends up punching Dolph Ziggler, threatening MVP, walks out of the ring. I mean, did it make me want to see the match more? No, but it at least, I guess it at least added to the feud. Now, as far as the stipulation has apparently been leaked. So if you don't want to hear the stipulation, if you're one of those people who want to be surprised, I'm going to give you to the count of three to turn your speakers down. One, two, three. Supposedly, it is a tables, ladders, and chairs match. We know this because the chuckleheads who run the promotional department put up a picture of Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler on Facebook with the caption reading, "Tables, ladders, and chairs at Extreme Rules Horror Show." They instantly pulled it down, but of course everybody screenshotted it, so it's too late. So once again, here's an example of chuckleheads who can't get things right. Nobody cleared it. Nobody looked at it and said, wait a minute, the stipulation hasn't been announced. Don't put that up. Why was that even created if you're not supposed to have the stipulation until the match itself? Why was that even created? It just makes you look stupid. It makes you look disorganized and lazy and sloppy. And it's just, it's bad business. It's just bad business overall. But Todd, the opening segment was okay. I mean, MVP is really, really good at what he does. Ziggler is always good on the mic, as is Drew McIntyre. It's just that I wish we could buy Dolph Ziggler as a real contender and not just, a match on its way to Randy Orton.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about that opening of Raw last night with MVP is this VIP lounge thing. And, you know, like you said, the match with Ziggler this coming Sunday, it looks like this regular tables and ladders and chairs on my match.
Yeah.
It's like a regular.
And it's not going to be. Are you excited to see it? Because do you think in any way, shape, or form, Todd, that Dolph Ziggler has any chance whatsoever of winning that belt?
Absolutely not. Well, like you said, he's just there to put people over. That's it.
Right. So it doesn't really matter what they say. It doesn't really matter what they do. You know what I mean? It's the equivalent of some dude from a backyard boxing federation. And I'm not saying that Dolph Ziggler isn't talented. Dolph Ziggler may be as or more talented than Drew McIntyre. But I'm saying the way he's promoted. The way he's promoted, it would be equivalent to saying, here's a guy from a backyard federation whose record is currently three wins and 64 losses, and he's going to face the heavyweight champion in an actual HBO boxing match. And he says he's going to kick his ass. How many tickets you think you're going to sell to that? You're going to just be like, well, this is going to be a slaughter. I mean, this is ridiculous to even take place. At this point, this is ridiculous. You have no contender, so you had to bring Dolph Ziggler over to be a contender based upon a thin thread that he brought Drew McIntyre into the Federation back when it mattered. But that's before you totally destroyed Dolph Ziggler's character into losing to Otis and everybody else he got into the ring with. And for the life of me, I don't know how he gets a title shot. So no matter what MVP does, no matter what Dolph Ziggler does, and no matter what Drew McIntyre does, this match is still going to be viewed as a preliminary match with a guy who has not been booked to be a title contender, Mike.
Right, and that's the thing. Now, I did like the fact that they're both good on the mic. All of them were good on the mic. Number one, they really didn't need Bobby Lashley out there, but he was out there. But also, like a little touch of, if I wasn't here doing what I'm doing, and I was just your normal Joe fan, and I watched that promo and I'm thinking, okay, the two guys talking about, well, I like what you're doing with the belt, the U.S. title. When I win, can you help me do the same thing with my title? And he goes, well, can you get your people to talk to my people? You know, that type of thing. I like that because it fits with that whole gimmick that they have with that belt and what he's trying to do with Bobby Lashley and everything else, you know, so it fits.
Yeah, it's not that it's not a good shtick. It's just that it's misplaced because we don't for a minute believe that Dolph Ziggler's winning anything. Anyway, we go backstage to where Charlie Caruso is once again interviewing Angel Garza, Andrade, and Zelina Vega. Angel Garza has a rose. Apparently they're going to fight the Viking Raiders. The Viking Raiders make their entrance, and Ibar ends up giving the rose instead. There's an interesting thing going on here. And we're going to talk about it as this match takes place. But we're either being very cleverly swerved, which I hope that's the case. We're either being very cleverly swerved, or the WWE isn't sure what they want to do. And if it's the second, then we're headed for disaster. If it's the first, that's good. During this match, we saw unequivocally that Andrade, time and time again, saved his partner. Time and time again, took a shot for Angel Garza. Time and time again, pulled Angel Garza's bacon out of the fire. That's not normally what a guy does who's going to be the bad guy in a feud between these two. That's not normally how you would handle it. And for the first time ever, we saw Angel Garza say, it's very hard sometimes to choose between two beautiful women, and Andrade really give him a dirty look, like, what are you talking about? You talking about Zelina Vega? And Zelina Vega kind of looking like, I wish you didn't say that. I don't know whether this is just a clever ploy or whether they're changing their mind about who they want to be the face. Now, they're making a huge, gigantic, colossal error if they make Andrade the face, and I will tell you why. He doesn't speak the language good enough. He's not going to be able to get over. He's simply not. Garza does. But I think that maybe Vince McMahon has seen what we saw and said, you know, he's so good at being that arrogant Eddie Guerrero type heelish whatever, that maybe Garza's better at being the heel because he's more pliable. We can do more with him. Whereas unfortunately, Andrade's just going to have to be the strong, silent type. Because I'm telling you, during that match, I kept saying to myself, I'm waiting for Andrade to get jealous again. I'm waiting for Andrade to say, this is my moment. Remember, that's what he did a couple of weeks ago. I'm waiting for Angel Garza to be like the good guy and say, well, you know, look, I've done everything I can for this guy, and he's just not happy. He doesn't like me, and he wants to be the big cheese, and let him be the big cheese. That didn't happen. So either the WWE is swerving us by making it going back and forth. It's going to be Garza. No, it's going to be Andrade. No, it's going to be Garza. No, it's going to be Andrade. If they're doing that knowingly to keep us guessing, then I give you a big thumbs up. If you're doing that because you're still not sure, be very careful. Because if you go too far one way or the other, we're not going to root for the guy. You're going to have to be very careful about this. So, Mike, what's your thoughts on that?
Right. And that's the thing. And maybe there's a third thing, is they're putting it on Stemmer, the whole flipping of Garza right now. I mean, like you said, if they're sitting there saying, okay, we're not sure who we want to flip, or making us think that they're not sure who they want to flip, and then they flip Garza anyway, somewhere maybe a month, 2 months, 3 months down the line, I'm all for that. You know, that's a good swerve. You know, that's them saying, okay, we're gonna make you think we're not sure, even though we're sure. Right? So I think that could be where we're heading. Because, look, this whole thing about what's his name? Garza's getting all the moves and seems to be getting all the wins and all that stuff. And what you call is taking the bullets for him. Well, that too is a swerve. And I wouldn't be at all surprised that at some point down the line, either one of them has jealousy issues, and probably more like Andrade, you know, has jealousy issues come back up again. But that's probably sometime further down the line.
See, we're going to have a little trouble with that, though, Mike, because everyone knows that Andrade and Charlotte Flair are a couple, and it's going to make it look weak and fake. I would not put Zelina Vega into this at all. If I was going to turn Andrade, or I was going to turn Angel Garza, one way or the other, I would not place that emphasis on Zelina Vega in any way, shape, or form. It would be just due to one of the other one's actions. Now, I thought what it was going to be is that Andrade wanted to keep outshining Angel Garza. I want to be the guy that wins. I want to be the guy that gets the pinfall. I want to be the guy that gets the credit. And Garza would swallow it for a certain length of time and then say, I've had enough of this. That's the way I thought it was going to go. But last night we clearly saw it was Andrade constantly taking the punishment for Angel Garza in order to allow Garza to win. And even when Andrade was eliminated, he didn't storm off as I expected him to do. It's exactly what I expected him to do. Or inadvertently cause Ibar to win. One of the two. He did neither. He did the exact opposite. He actually helped Angel Garza win. So I don't know where this is going. I know out of the two, if I had my dithers, I would make Garza the face, because I think he has more ability to connect with the crowd as a gray level face, where you say, well, you know, listen, he's not squeaky clean. He cheats a lot. He does these things, but he's kind of harmless. He doesn't do anything that bad. He just kind of, he's a shortcut artist, and, you know, he's not above breaking a rule or having, you know, tricking a referee, but he's not necessarily, you know, trying to put somebody's eye out. So I think I'd go with Garza, Todd, if I was really going to switch one of these guys up. What's your thoughts?
Like you said, I agree with you on that. Is because I think Garza could be has a better language barrier, doing the English part of
yeah,
being a face, but Andrade not so good as being a face.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I think you can be a heel and not have to talk much. I think you're going to have to talk to be a face, a successful face. And I think that Garza is good at it, and his facial expressions are really good. His facial expressions are really good. I thought it was excellent when Ibar took away the rose and handed it to Charlie Caruso. The look on Garza's face was pretty good, Mike.
It really was. Now, it would have been even better if, I understand why she's not there, because if the pregnancy rumors were true with Sarah Logan, it would have been even better if it was the other one, Sarah Logan, but that's just me parsing it, you know. But yeah, I like this, and I like the fact that, you know, they're starting to change their tune on the Viking Raiders. And we'll get to that when they come out and what they did and what they had the people outside the things do. But yeah, I liked it. I liked the fact that he gave the rose to her, and that's the case. And hey, you know, if this is all for a swerve, they're trying to swerve us into thinking, well, is it going to be Andrade and it's still going to be, I'm all for it, you know, like you said.
So am I, but you know, knowing the WWE, it's probably indecision rather than planned swerving. Anyway, we get Ruby Riott backstage. She's accosted again by the Iconics, who were saying, oh, you don't have a tag team partner. And I really expected we were probably at this point going to see Liv Morgan. I'm not sure what's going on with Liv Morgan. If she's being punished for being part of that boat party, nobody else is. They were all there. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Liv Morgan. I do know that it makes about as much sense to have Bianca Belair team with Ruby Riott as, you know, it does to have, you know, Cody Rhodes on the show. It makes no sense whatsoever. None. But away we go with it. And on top of that, you let a team that was formed 1 second ago with two people who have, to my knowledge, never even been in the ring with each other, much less worked as partners, beat a legitimate tag team. And on top of beating a legitimate tag team, you didn't even do it to make Ruby Riott look good, because Ruby Riott did nothing. She just got beat up until she made the hot tag, and then Bianca Belair just single-handedly destroys both Iconics. This was a mistake. It's not a mistake to continue the Ruby Riott Iconics thing. It's a mistake that they were given the win. It's an absolute mistake that they were given the win. They just shouldn't have won. Simple as that. Whether it was a miscommunication with the newly formed team or just a flat out win, the Iconics are a legitimate tag team, and they cannot be destroyed by just two individuals who've never been in the ring together at all, ever, as a team, and then one of them just single-handedly wipes them out. We now have nothing to look forward to with the reunion of the Riott Squad. We have already seen the Iconics beaten. This is a gigantic mistake. It would have been much better to see Ruby Riott and Bianca Belair lose that match and the Iconics still say, we're the best team, blah, 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 you guys, blah, blah, blah. And we anticipate, of course, that at some point, Liv Morgan's going to come back and the two that really gel as a team is going to take on the Iconics. Mike, this, I thought, was a huge mistake on the WWE's part.
Yeah, it really was a definite mistake on their part. And the thing is I don't, again, where is she? You know, where's Liv Morgan? Why aren't they using her correctly again? I mean, after all the good stuff they've done the last few weeks or so, particularly on Raw, you know, I wanted to see them use Bianca Belair more than they've been using her, but not like this.
Yeah, me too. I'm all for Bianca Belair showing up. I'm all for even beating one of the Iconics by herself, but I'm not for a tag team with Ruby Riott. It almost makes me think that Liv Morgan's not coming back, because if they had a reunion of the Riott Squad planned, why in the world would you let two people who've never been in the ring together form a team to beat them already? Then the idea is gone that she needs her partner her old partner to beat them. That idea is shot down in flames. Doesn't make any sense at all. So I thought this was a huge mistake, Todd. I thought they should have let the Iconics win this.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they should have let the Iconics to win this match with Ruby Riott and Bianca Belair. I would not have the opposing team, the odd team, not the one that matched. I would have let the Iconics get the victory over them. I think that was a
How do you book it? Well, it's very simple. You don't want either one of them to turn heel. You don't want Bianca Belair to turn heel, and you don't want Ruby Riott to turn heel. So you just have a miscommunication where somehow one or the other, I would have had Ruby Riott accidentally hit Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair gets wrapped up for the 1-2-3. And backstage, give them 10 seconds for Ruby Riott to come in and say, I'm sorry, that was not intentional. And Bianca Belair to say, look, I'm not blaming you for what happened. I realize it's the first time we've ever teamed up. But let me give you a little word of advice. You need your partner. And that's it. That's it. That's all you need to do. 15-second skit, and, you know, we get it. We get where this is going. Nope, couldn't do it. By the way, yeah, I did promise Dave in Staten Island I would talk about this. So, listen, Rusev tested positive for COVID. Says he feels fine. He said, I don't have a really keen sense of smell or taste, but I feel fine. A little tired, but I feel fine. I don't have a sore throat or a cough or headache. I don't have any of that stuff. Both Alana's parents had tested positive for COVID. Her mother was in the hospital, apparently, and because she's had some pre-existing conditions, and she was on oxygen and things, she's been released, and she's fine. And her father's not feeling good, but he's not hospitalized, and he's fine. See, the thing is, people are fine. Even elderly people are starting to become fine with this. It's not good to be sick, but it's also not good to be scared to death. You're going to die if you catch this. This is not a zombie plague. Anyway, now here's where Raw, I think, starts to get a little bit cerebral, and I'm starting to really enjoy it. We get a Randy Orton skit backstage where he basically is listing every single person he's destroyed, and they're showing them. And the list is long. Now, of course, they don't say that 99% of these people got revenge, but, you know, you're not going to do that. But he mentions Ric Flair. He mentions Ric Flair. And then when Ric Flair says, come on, let's go do this match, he kind of says, yeah, I'm right behind you. Now, this was after Ric Flair had a very good talk with the Big Show, who apparently the WWE listened to this show. Because, Mike, do you remember me saying that Ric Flair should mention what he said at the Hall of Fame speech to the Giant and say, I just don't want to see you get destroyed this way? Do you remember me saying that that's exactly what should be said so that it would make Ric Flair look like he was really trying hard to prevent the Big Show from being destroyed?
Right. Yeah, you're right. And here's the deal. Think about it. Particularly on Raw, we've said that a lot over the last, say, 3 to 4 months, you know, on Raw. Now, maybe not so much on SmackDown, but on Raw, yeah, we've said that maybe they've been listening to this show in terms of different things that they've done, you know? And yeah, that's right. He should have done that, and he probably should have done it sooner. But again,
yep.
I enjoyed watching it, and yeah, it got cerebral on it, you know.
Mike, I couldn't believe when he started to say it. I said, "Oh my God, this is exactly what we said." We said Ric Flair should have came out, and instead of saying, "You know, you go back to Netflix cartoon," he should have said, "Look, I." At my Hall of Fame speech, said you're the biggest, best man I've ever seen, and you can own this business. And that's exactly what he said. Word for word, he said what we said he should say. Word for friggin' word. Now, that's probably a coincidence, and that's fine. At least they're getting it right. But now we have a dynamic, don't we? So for the people who listen to the show and say, oh, yeah, you know, you guys with your fantasy booking, well, but we're right, aren't we? Because now we have a dynamic. What is that dynamic? It's threefold. The Big Show thinks Ric Flair is blowing smoke up his ass because he wants to promote Randy Orton. Randy Orton is mad because he thinks Ric Flair is trying to prevent him from taking out the Big Show and adding him to the list of legends he's destroyed. Ric Flair is in the middle, and you don't know where he lies. Is he really just blowing smoke up the Big Show's ass, or is he really sympathetic to the Big Show? Now you have a dynamic, which I said should have existed to begin with. And we're going into Extreme Rules in a match you shouldn't be interested in. Really interesting. Is Randy Orton going to lose? No. But, oh, I'm sorry, they're not at Extreme Rules. They're the week after on the Raw, which is great. Is Randy Orton going to lose? No. But now in the back of your mind, you're saying, wait. Is Ric Flair going to play into this match? Is Randy Orton going to do something to Ric Flair? There's a good possibility. Or is Ric Flair going to reveal himself really the dirtiest player in the game and this was all a swerve to get rid of the Big Show? Maybe. Either way, we called this exactly the way it went down. It's not the first time we've done it. So, you know, yeah, are we patting ourselves on the back a little? Probably. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of people who write in and say, hey, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Well, apparently we do. Because once again, Todd nailed it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it looks like we're going to get swerved here. Maybe Ric Flair's messing with Big Show's head, or Ric Flair is trying to be sympathetic to the Big Show. It's hard to tell right there.
It could go either way, but bringing up that Hall of Fame speech, which is exactly what we called for, is proof that they are once again thinking. Someone is thinking. It's not hard. If we can do it, you can do it. It's made the segment very interesting. Now, backstage, we have Buddy Murphy saying, wait a minute. You're not really suggesting that you're going to blind Rey Mysterio. And Seth Rollins says, well, yeah, listen, there's no success without some people, you know, failure. And remember, this is the match Ray asked for. I didn't ask for this match. So there might be some dissension in the ranks there. Once again, Austin Theory's not around. I don't know whether it's due to the speaking out movement thing or a COVID thing. I don't know. If he doesn't get back soon, he's done. Anyway, he goes to the ring, has a long-winded speech about the whole Rey Mysterio thing, which is really getting old. Really getting old. And out comes Kevin Owens, who is not in a suit of armor and protected by a bubble. And, you know, he should come out. He should have came out like Dean Ambrose's old character, I guess. Like Bane. But anyway. And he says, you know, what kind of a scumbag do you have to be to get a guy like Rey Mysterio to actually put that stipulation in a match? And then they go on to have a really good match. I'm not going to down the match at all. But this has to be one of the most colossally bad booking ideas I have ever heard of in my life. Not only do you book your main heel to lose to a guy before the actual pay-per-view, to which he's not even fighting that guy, but if that's not bad enough, you have not one, not two, but three WWE superstars at ringside when you only have one on Seth Rollins' side, making it look like Seth Rollins is the face. He's got to overcome Aleister Black. He's got to overcome Rey Mysterio. He's got to overcome Dominic. Apparently, Buddy Murphy is out like a light for life. And he's got to overcome Kevin Owens. So I understand what the booking is as well. Under those odds, of course, Seth Rollins lost, but you never have your heel lose before the main event. How does it look for Seth Rollins? Never wins. The son of a bitch never wins. So how is he being taken seriously? He is totally being given the Bray Wyatt treatment. I mean totally. Seth Rollins is totally irrelevant. He is not Raw's top heel. He's not even a top heel. Because he never, ever wins, and neither does anyone in his stable. So I had it figured this way. I said, well, Buddy Murphy will lose. Because they're not going to have him beat Aleister Black. But Seth Rollins will win. He might not win fairly, but he's going to win. Just to rub it in Ray's face. And probably try to damage Kevin Owens' eyeball, and then Ray will come in and make the save or something. Because that's typical booking. Instead, he loses. And by the way, so does Buddy Murphy, technically. Okay, he doesn't technically lose by a pinfall because they got to be a clusterfuck. But the bottom line is he got kicked. He was going to get, he got the black mass. He was going to get pinned. Who booked that? Who the hell booked that? So if you're Rey Mysterio, you're like, okay, do you do that in a movie? Do you like, well, listen, before Steven Seagal gets to the main bad guy, the cop actually kicks the hell out of him and arrests him. But then the guy gets out, so then Seagal gets him. Oh, yeah, but that's not anticlimactic. That's not the way it works. Nobody but the guy that is the central focus of your storyline should ever pin your opponent until after the pay-per-view. Simple as that. Otherwise, the guy who is the central focus of your storyline doesn't look special, doesn't look like Rey Mysterio has to rise to the occasion. Kevin Owens just got all the revenge he needs for him. He just beat his ass. And if Rey Mysterio was so terribly mad at Seth Rollins, he could have took it out on him right then and there. Right then and there while he's being beaten. But he didn't. So now this is a very anticlimactic match with Seth Rollins, who can't win anything, and his one stooge, who also can't win anything, and by the way, isn't even 100% on Seth Rollins' side anymore. This was horrible, horrible booking, Mike.
It really was. As good as what we saw earlier with Ric Flair and that dynamic was, this was equally as bad, and that's the thing. You don't want to see that happen, I mean, look, I would have been all for him, what's his name, winning, Seth Rollins winning, But obviously, and look, even if you didn't want to count, Dominic as being the fourth person, including Seth Rollins, you still had 3-on-1 with Seth Rollins and Aleister Black and you still had 3-on-1 with those other guys, So yeah, okay, I get that. Now, one other thing about the Ric Flair situation, what it also sets up? If Ric Flair and the Big Show are good friends, and apparently they are, and this whole thing with Randy Orton, and Randy Orton ends up punting Ric Flair somewhere, this could set up, Ric Flair, the Big Show's going to lose, but at some point he's going to hit Randy Orton with the WD, and that's going to get revenge for Ric Flair.
There's a lot of things it could set up. My opinion is this. The long-term plans of the WWE will be to put the belt back on Randy Orton for another time before fans get put in the arena, probably at SummerSlam. Drew McIntyre will lose, but then as soon as fans are able to be back into the arena, Drew McIntyre will have that big, huge match with Randy Orton in which he wins, and that will be the Drew McIntyre celebrates with the fans moment he was cheated off of in WrestleMania. That's my theory of where they're going with that. But this is a mistake, Todd. You can't have your main bad guy lose before the pay-per-view.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's whoever booked this, they should get a earful in the ear from the.
Yeah, but apparently the WWE liked it. Vince McMahon has to sign off on all this, so I don't know. I just don't know. Anyway, it's supposed to be Randy Orton against R-Truth, but there's a really pretty funny segment where he thinks he's fighting Ric Flair, and then when he realizes he's not, he asks Tozawa to teach him how to be a black belt in 5 minutes. Tozawa says no. Tozawa is a hidden treasure. Okay? We said this before on this show, by the way. When Tozawa was with Titus Worldwide, we said, look out for Tozawa. He has great facial expressions. He's an entertainer at heart, you can see. He could be a player. Now, you know, he's not going to be a champion, big major champion. He could be a real player. He could be somebody you can utilize. And now we're seeing it. So he gets in the ring with Tozawa instead and says, well, I'll defend my 24/7 belt against you. And here comes Tozawa with the ninjas. While R-Truth is trying to tell him, I'm out here alone and you're out here with ninjas, what does that say? Here comes Shayna Baszler. Here's another bad booking decision. Why is it a bad booking decision? Because Tozawa is a bad guy. That's why. Shayna Baszler takes out all three of the ninjas and Tozawa runs away. She then turns to R-Truth, who just says, I'll leave. And she cuts a short promo saying, I'm back. Yeah, but you're back having decimated some bad guys. You stood on R-Truth's side. Regardless of what you say, you didn't attack R-Truth first. If you just wanted to clear the ring, you could have attacked everyone equally. You didn't do that. You sided with the underdog. And when you side with the underdog, that makes you a face. And yet, her words make it look like she's a heel. So once again, I don't like this because I think that this is just adding to the nonsense. Now, if you had Tozawa and R-Truth tie up for a minute and then the ninjas jump in and then Shayna Baszler's music hits and she just tosses everyone from the ring and says, enough of the clown show, I got something to say, that's different. Because then she just wanted the ring cleared. But that's not what you did. And the way you made it look, at least to me, is that she was on R-Truth's side until it was time for him to leave because he was outnumbered, which makes her look like a face, and that's not what you want. So I have no idea, Mike, why they pulled this off.
I don't know either. Now, granted, I like the fact that she cleared the ring, but like you said, you know, it just makes her look like a face, and that's not what you want for her at this point. You know, you don't really have that, again, you don't really have that top heel on either women's or men's right now.
Nope.
You don't really have that top heel. And she would have served as that top heel. I mean, Charlotte would, but Charlotte's hurt right now. You know, Unless we're thinking about we're going to turn her face for a short amount of time and then flip her back. But again, that wouldn't work either.
So, no, it wouldn't work. It absolutely would not work. Shayna Baszler's not going to work as a face. This was a mistake. It was an obvious mistake, and I have no idea why they did it. If fans were there, you don't think fans would cheer Shayna Baszler for sticking up for R-Truth? Of course. And attacking these ninjas? Of course. And chasing away Akira Tozawa, the villain? Of course. Okay, she also chases away R-Truth, but she didn't really threaten him. She just gave him a dirty look. The real way to have done this, again, is to just have those two be lock up for a minute with the ninjas at ringside, have Shayna Baszler come down. The ninjas try to stop her. She throws them around, gets in the ring, throws out R-Truth, throws out Akira Tozawa, and say, enough of this stupidity. A real fighter has something to say. That would have been cool. Doesn't work this way. I'm sorry. It was a very bad decision. Very, very bad decision. And I just don't understand it. So we get to Bobby Lashley and MVP. Once again, this is working like gold. And I'm going to tell you something. We had our chance with Ricochet. He couldn't cut it. We had our chance with Bobby Lashley. He wasn't cutting it. We had a chance with Cedric Alexander. He wasn't really cutting it. What is the only difference now? The difference is MVP. MVP has made all of this work. So give him the credit he deserves. I am now very interested in this storyline. And for all of you people who say Ricochet's been treated terribly and then now he got mauled again by Bobby Lashley, you're about to see a really good program, because I'm telling you, it's going to come down to Cedric Alexander versus Ricochet. Cedric Alexander is joining MVP stable. I promise you. And this is going to be a huge boost to his career. Because the first person he's going to fight is Ricochet, and that's going to be one hell of a match. That's exactly the type of opponent Ricochet needs. Doesn't need to be fucking around with, Eric Rowan. He needs to be fighting people like Cedric Alexander. This is going to work. And it's going to provide you with a really good match, too, which is exactly what the angle is supposed to do. A good angle provides you with a good match. This is going to be a really good match. And for Cedric Alexander to have a spokesman like MVP, it's going to skyrocket his career. It's going to skyrocket his career. And it's going to give Ricochet a real enemy. Somebody you can really buy into and say this is going to be a great series of matches. They're about equal in height and weight and athletic ability and agility. This is going to be really good. So I'm all for this. This is utilizing Cedric Alexander, who absolutely is underutilized. It's utilizing Ricochet, who was utilized for a while but then put on the back burner. It's helping Bobby Lashley. The only common denominator in this that has changed to make three boring, not boring in the ring necessarily, but three very boring personalities actually matter is MVP. And Mike, I think this is going in a great direction, and I'm really hooked on this storyline.
Right, and you forgot, I know it's on the back burner, it's on center right now, but we still got that whole thing between MVP and I'm blanking on his name now, Apollo Crews.
Right, right.
It seems like it's on simmer right now, but he's still there, you know.
Yep.
Because MVP still has Cruz's U.S. belt, and you know Cruz is going to get it back. You know that, right? So yeah, and you know that at some point Cruz is going to turn heel as well, and he could very well end up with MVP.
We don't even know that for sure. That's the good thing. We're not sure. Are they going to use this to make Cruz a big hero? Maybe. I know Cedric Alexander's turning. Unless they swerve us and it's Ricochet, but I don't think so. I know Cedric Alexander's turning. Apollo Crews, I'm not so sure about. They could do that, but I'm not sure they will. I do know it's going to help Ricochet. I do know it's going to help Cedric Alexander. I do know it's already helping Apollo Crews, and it's totally helped Bobby Lashley. So MVP has done all this, and he's done it well. I'm very happy with the way this is turning out. And again, just the fact that we don't know what's going to happen with Apollo Crews. We don't know what's going to happen with Ricochet and Alexander. Todd proves that this is an angle that's working.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Deb. Like you said, if they turn Cedric Alexander heel, it will work. If they did it to Ricochet, they turn him heel, it won't work. I'd rather have what you say you're going to say. I would have Cedric as the heel.
Me too.
Than Ricochet.
Yeah, me too. I'm not sure Ricochet will work. I agree with that. I'm not sure Ricochet will work. It could, but I don't see it. So let's get to Sasha Banks and Bayley versus the Kabuki Warriors. Once again, I think that Sasha and Bayley did a good job getting some heat before the match. They did the right thing with Kairi Sane being the person trying to make the hot tag in trouble. She's the only one that doesn't have a match nor a title shot at Extreme Rules, so she's obviously got to be the person that's going to take the pinfall, and that's exactly what happened. But in doing so, they made Asuka look extremely good, totally destroying both Bayley and Sasha, although I thought Sasha did a poor job of selling Asuka. She looked too fresh and happy, and at the end, when she won, she's just like, yeah, well, here I am dancing. Well, you were caught in the Asuka lock for a while and stuff. You should have been holding your shoulder and leaning on Bayley and like, oh, geez, we won. Let's get the hell out of here. So I think you undersold Asuka a little bit. But aside from that, everything was great. Once again, and we've said this a lot, and I know people are probably sick of us saying it, but once again, Asuka is at the peak of her career. She is like a whirlwind in there. Even Samoa Joe on commentary couldn't help kind of say, damn, I mean, she's just on another level right now. I mean, she's just, you know, she's hitting all of her spots. She's just as, she's like lightning. She's enthusiastic. And all this without a crowd. She's been your true MVP of this pandemic. Hands down, Asuka's been your true MVP during this pandemic. She hasn't missed one episode that you've asked her to. Without an audience, she still managed to engage the audience at home. She's managed to be energetic at a time when it's very easy not to be energetic because you don't have the energy of the crowd behind you. And that energy has been catchy, and her opponents have been energized because of the energy she's shown. And I just think she's been your MVP for this whole thing, Mike. She's done everything that you've asked of her.
Yeah, she really has. We talked about earlier, you know, Zelina Vega and her crew and what they've done earlier on. But right now, she's been the most consistent person, number one. Number two, not only that, but think about this. Yeah, Yeah, Kairi Sane took the loss, but before she took the loss, she looked relatively good, and she looked relatively happy. And she even, I mean, for them to get the win, they had to pull her off of Sasha. Was it Sasha? Yeah, it was.
Sasha, yeah.
She hit the insane elbow. They had to pull her off of Sasha.
Yes.
If they let her pin Sasha, they win a match.
Right, that would have been terrible. Right. And that would have been a mistake because Sasha's going for the belt. Now, here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that Kairi Sane is still not signed, and she's probably not going to, but that's not written in rock. But she has agreed, apparently, to stay long enough to, if she doesn't re-sign, or perhaps even if she does, they are going to have a feud between her and Asuka. Now, that is going to be good. If they do that, I think the fans are going to be real happy with it. And Kairi Sane has kind of said, if I want to leave, that's what I kind of want to do is put Asuka over. And, you know, and that could be really good. That could be really good. We're staring down the barrel of some really good matches. Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton should be good. If we do have Cedric Alexander versus Ricochet, that's going to be really good. If we have Asuka versus Kairi Sane, that's going to be really good. We're staring down Bayley and Sasha. That's going to be really good. There's a lot of matches on this Raw brand that's building up to be pretty damn good because they're starting to utilize their people. And I do believe we're going to see Angel Garza versus and Andrade versus the Street Profits, and that's going to be really good. So I do think that we've got some really good, exciting matches to look forward to on Raw. Now, they got to be careful with this horrible booking, though. You've got to totally be careful. You can't book Seth Rollins to lose a match before a major pay-per-view match. You just can't do that. That is absolutely booking malpractice. I don't care how many. And then to have that many faces at ringside makes them look like the heel faction. I mean, that's just dumb. That's a no-brainer. You just don't do it. I don't care if you want to kiss Kevin Owens' ass. You don't do it. Kevin Owens at this point is irrelevant. He's a good wrestler, but his personality and the current gimmick you're giving him is boring. And I don't see it being electric until fans get back, and fans ain't getting back anytime soon, so I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing promoting Kevin Owens, who has no match at Extreme Rules. That was dumb. It's also dumb to have Shayna Baszler come out and look like a face by helping R-Truth. That is dumb. So there's a couple of dumb unforced errors here. Really, really dumb. And that's a shame, because other than that, this show was really good. Sasha and Bayley and the Kabuki Warriors put on a great match. I thought it was a great match and ended perfectly the way it should end. Everything was fine. There really wasn't a bad match all night long. Okay, we could argue that, and of course we made the mistake of Ruby Riott and Bianca Belair beating the Iconics. That is an unforced error. But the match itself was okay. It's just the outcome was ridiculous. The booking here was very questionable. If I could reverse it and Seth Rollins wins, then the rest of the pack come down because he's threatening to put out Kevin Owens' eye, awesome. Bianca Belair and Ruby Riott have some miscommunication, which leads to the Iconics winning, and Bianca Belair telling her, look, honey, I don't blame you for the miscommunication, but as far as our partnership, that's over. You know who you need for a partner. And you have Shayna Baszler clear the ring of everyone and not look like a face, then this is an A-plus show. It really is, because there's nothing wrong. It's a great go-home show. Nothing is wrong. Unfortunately, those things didn't happen. Those three things really did bring the rating of this show down, because these are major things. Seth Rollins losing is a major, major, that's the most major thing. The second most major thing is probably returning Shayna Baszler and making her look like we're not sure whether she's a heel or a face. That's dumb. And then the third most major thing is you can't have the Iconics lose to a fabricated tag team if you're trying to push for the reunion of the Riott Squad. That's dumb. But what was good in this show was superbly good. And that is the whole Ric Flair. Here's the thing. Isn't it funny how the veterans have to come out of the woodwork in order for Raw to really excel? You get Ric Flair and Randy Orton involved in a feud with the Big Show, and all of a sudden, man, we're real interested in this. Yeah, where's the rookie? Where's the up-and-comer? Oh, that's right, there isn't one. And then the other things we're interested in, MVP has to pull together. Is he a rookie? Is he new? No. This is accelerating my point and exaggerating my point that the people who are coming up in the business right now aren't learning correctly. Because you always have to go back to these old veterans to pull their shit out of the fire and make them better. And this should not be the case. It should not be the case. Without MVP, we're not having this whole... You could have had, Ricochet and Cedric Alexander get into a tiff during a tag team match and they're going to fight. It's still going to be the same match. And it's still going to be a good match, but it's not going to be the same. Everything that MVP is doing right now is helping. I've never seen someone, and I'm not an MVP fan, especially in the ring, I'm not. I'm not a huge MVP fan, but I'm telling you, he really is an MVP backstage here. He is pulling together people who I never thought I'd be interested in again and really making me interested in them. And God bless Ric Flair, who during a pandemic is saying, listen, I'm not afraid to show up like Kevin Owens, and pulls himself together and really has probably one of his best promos. I thought this was one of Ric Flair's best promos. A lot of people were saying, oh, poor Ric Flair is senile. All he does is come out and say, woo, let me tell you something. Big guy. No, he had a great promo this time. A promo we called for, by the way, almost wrote word for word, by the way. If you doubt us, go back and listen to the show. If you think that promo wasn't basically word for word what we said, go back and listen. One of his very best promos. Big Show also had one of his very best promos. Looking at Ric Flair and remembering that time. Ric Flair even mentioning it brought a tear to your eye, remember? Remember I said that's what he should say? Great promo. Randy Orton, a great promo. Great promo. Even mentioning Ric Flair's name and then kind of quickly shutting up about that, and then Ric Flair shows up. All of this is gold. You came so close, WWE, to an A-plus show. Three booking mistakes destroyed it. Unfortunately, they were big ones. They weren't tiny ones. So my rating for this show, which could have and should have been an A+, is all the way down to a B-, because you just can't have Seth Rollins lose. And you cannot have the Iconics lose, and you cannot have Shayna Baszler show up and look like a face. Those three things are absolutely ridiculous. And they're major. They're not tiny little things. So I give the show a B-. Mike, what's your thoughts?
I gotta give it a B-minus as well. And that's even with, and like I said, Marcus, even though she took the pinfall, she still looks strong coming out of that match.
Absolutely. And see, that's good booking, Mike. She gave her the finisher. Everybody in the world knew Sasha's not kicking out of that. Period. But she was pulled out of the ring. That makes it look like, well, on any given night, she absolutely can beat Sasha Banks. That's the key. Now, was Seth Rollins, did Seth Rollins look like that losing? No, he just looked like he lost.
Right. And that's the thing. That's the thing. If they ended up all matches like that, yeah. I mean, and we know what's going to happen in about a month or two or three with Kairi Sane. Maybe a little bit more than that. She's probably not going to be here. She probably will be back in Japan, maybe, if they allow them to fly, if they allow people to fly, if they lift the flights, restrictions and stuff. If not, then there's a chance that if they don't lift the flight restrictions, then there's a chance she resigns and stays a while, and we still get.
Well, you know what? Even if they lift the flight restrictions, there's a chance still she might sign, because then they could say, well, how about part time? How about you just come back a few, months out of the year or whatever, or just here and there, and we'll still pay you to be our ambassador in Japan and all that kind of stuff. So there is still a chance, Mike, that she could even re-sign then. I think what Kairi Sane wants more than anything else, obviously other than to be with her husband, but aside from that, I think what she wants more than anything else is to be utilized. Not necessarily win, but to be utilized. Last night, I think she felt utilized. If there's a feud with Asuka, she certainly feels utilized. So perhaps, Todd, that will be enough for her. What's your rating this week on Raw?
I got to go to the same grade with you.
So we're all doing the B-. Mike, I think that this came so damn close to being an A-plus show. It really hurts me that we have to give it a B-.
It really does hurt me, too, because, again, there were some very, very good things in this show. It's just that the three major things that were bad were really bad.
That's the problem.
And they can't
really overcome. No, you can't overlook them, unfortunately. I tried to. I might have been able to overlook the Shayna Baszler thing a little bit, but the Iconics thing, I cannot. And the Seth Rollins thing, I just, whoever wrote this, you really have to rethink what this look made the faces look like bullies. Oh, we're going to come down here. It's one thing for one person to come down and even up the odds. That's not what happened. It's absolutely ridiculous what happened. It made Seth Rollins look like, well, no matter which way I turn, and they even said it. Oh, Seth Rollins got no way to escape. There's this person on this side and that person on that side. Well, how is this fair? Now, you're going to say, well, nobody touched him. No, nobody touched him. But it still looked patently unfair. And you never have your heel lose before a big... Now you know he's going to beat Rey Mysterio. You know it. If he doesn't, if he loses to Rey Mysterio, then Seth Rollins needs to take some time off. And they're going to have to rebuild his character when he comes back, because if he loses to Rey Mysterio, he's done. He's absolutely 100% wrap him up in a bow, done. Because he don't beat anybody. He can't beat anyone. So how is he the Monday Night Messiah? He can't beat anybody. So he's going to have to beat Rey Mysterio to even get back a little bit. And that's not even enough. And again, you took Ruby Riott, who I was so interested in, because the storyline is supposed to be Ruby Riott can't gel. She's antisocial. Don't you guys get it? She's supposed to be this punk rock girl who's just an antisocial whatever who can't get along with anyone. She don't get along with the bad guys. She don't get along with the good guys. She doesn't gel with anyone. So she's not functioning on all cylinders when she's with Bianca Belair or she's with somebody else, and it's not working. But when Liv Morgan comes back, that's the person she gels with and makes them extremely hard to beat. That's the story you're supposed to be telling. Instead, they won. Oh, I can gel with anybody. I'm not antisocial. You've almost ruined Ruby Riott's character, Mike.
Yeah, you really haven't. Another thing, think about this. You talked about the tag team situation. Why they had what the Iconics lose and all that stuff. But the thing is if you're going to have them, if they're going to be special or good, you got to have them win, number one. Number two, you got to have other tag teams come up, you know.
Right.
And frankly, you know what? Where's Shayna Baszler's running partners?
I don't know. Good question. I don't know.
I thought they were going to bring Io Shirai up.
Me too. I don't know. They're locked in a ratings war with AEW, so they don't want to do it. But, Mike, let's just talk about Ruby Riott for a minute. What would have been wrong with Ruby Riott going on a losing streak and everyone that's her partner or that tries to help her just simply saying, look, honey, you are not – you just don't gel with me, okay? And then Ruby Riott has that moment where she just says, she's good on the mic. So give her the mic and have her just simply say, look, I always grew up like this. I didn't have many friends. I was always antisocial. I was always the girl that didn't fit in anywhere. I always came in here with a chip on my shoulder trying to prove myself to everybody because, to be honest, I didn't fit in with anybody. And I found two people in my lifetime that I fit in with. And I screwed them both up. Both of them. And now I don't have any friends. And maybe this is the way it's just supposed to be. Maybe I'm just supposed to be this way. So the only thing I can do is I'm not going to infect anybody else with my presence. I'm not going to ask for any more partners. I'm not going to ask people to help me. My whole life long, I didn't, and I got along this way. So if the Iconics want to fight me 2-on-1, which they always do anyway, then I'm going to accept that match. And if I get my ass kicked, then I get my ass kicked. And if I win, I win. But you know what? It's better than making a fool out of myself, trying to be a partner with someone I just don't gel with. And then what you have, obviously, is her start the match 2-on-1. And when the Iconics start to really double team her, Liv Morgan comes in the ring and cleans house. And you have that reunion moment. And everybody's happy. And then Ruby Riott can say, try me now, Iconics. Try us now. That's it. That's your moment. That's the story you're trying to tell, and you fucked it up. Because we can't have Bianca Belair lose. Why? Why, if Ruby Riott hits her with her finisher accidentally thinking she's going to hit one of the Iconics, how come you can't have that? That doesn't hurt Bianca Belair. And in fact, it helps her face character if she's not really mad at Ruby Riott. She just says, look, we don't gel, okay? I'm not blaming you for kicking me. I'm not blaming you for the loss. I'm just saying we don't gel. So please keep me out of your plans from now on, okay? That gives Ruby Riott the sympathy. And you say, hey, the Iconics are right. You don't have any friends. And then you just keep that up with the Iconics saying, you're losing even the few friends you did have. Where's Sarah Logan? Where's Liv Morgan? How did Bianca Belair work out? The people you are trying to recruit as friends don't want nothing to do with you. I think maybe you better face facts. Nobody likes you. That gives Ruby Riott the sympathy. That's the story you're trying to tell. And that's why it's so egregious, Mike, when they screw it up like this.
It is really egregious. And furthermore, think about this. Not only does she come in, not only does Liv Morgan come in and make the save, she comes in and makes the save in her original Harley Quinn-esque gear, you know?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be great?
And that's the thing. And then maybe later on, after she has, if the rumors are true, after Sarah Logan has her baby, re-sign her, and then the three of them get back together, and they go on a little run, causing havoc and all that stuff. I mean, it could be. I mean, if they had them right in the first place, they could have been a female version of the X.
Absolutely, Mike. Just think about this. You got Sasha and Bayley. They're going to need to lose their tag team belts to somebody. Can you imagine the buildup you could have had with the Riot Squad if this happened? So Ruby Riot, it's told you have no friends. Ruby Riot admits, I guess I don't. This has been the story of my life. You know how many teenage girls can relate to that and say, I never really fit in. I dressed different. I looked different. I listened to different music. I had different thoughts and different ideas. I'm not the most beautiful girl on the planet. I wasn't the girl that was invited to all the dances and all the whatevers. Okay. I was who I was, and it didn't make me very many friends. People are going to relate to that. And then having her say, so I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to look for friends. I'm just going to fight on my own. You get the Iconics in the ring. They're the exact foils that you need for a girl like Ruby Riott to rub it in and rub it in and rub it in. And then when Liv Morgan comes out and cleans house, and you have that moment where they're standing, 8 feet apart in the ring, and Ruby Riott's not sure what to do because she knows she dropped Liv Morgan on her head. And Liv Morgan picks up that microphone and says, there was a part of me that wanted to come out here not too long ago and help the Iconics kick your ass. But then I got thinking about it. And I realized the reason you did that is because you're right, I was lost. I didn't know who I was. I was trying to be this person. I was trying to be that person. I was trying to be any person that would help me get ahead in this business. And the truth is, you were right. That person that I actually was is here. And then they have that moment where they, hug. And the Riot Squad is back. And people say, shit, this is going to be good. You got to have those moments. Then the very first thing people think of is, wow, I wonder how Sasha and Bayley would handle them because this is a formidable tag team. You have that. You've ruined it. You've ruined it. For what reason is the Iconics losing? You've ruined it. It's so ridiculous. It actually angered me. I was actually mad. I was like, what the hell is going on? And when Seth Rollins lost, I was equally mad. You just can't have it. The scenario is supposed to be, okay, maybe Aleister Black, it starts out with Buddy Murphy. Seth Rollins interferes, so, Kevin Owens comes down or whatever. The odds are equal. But then, past that, you got to have Seth Rollins look like he's going to put out Kevin Owens' eye. Buddy Murphy has somehow managed to stop Aleister Black for the moment, and it looks like Kevin Owens is finished. And then out comes Rey Mysterio and his son. Chases Seth Rollins away. Seth Rollins is just, warning him, I came that close. And if I do it to Kevin Owens, you damn sure bet I'll do it to you. That's what needs to have happened. Period. I don't know why anybody thinks anything different should have happened. That's the only way to promote this match. We've already seen the bad guy lose. Where's the excitement? Where's the excitement of Seth Rollins? Can Rey Mysterio overcome him? Kevin Owens just did. It's just terrible. I mean, it's just terrible. Those three mistakes destroyed this show. And for us to still give it a B-minus shows you how good of a show it would have been had they not done those ridiculous things. Now, remember this. We were the people who told you what Ric Flair should have said, and then 2 weeks later he says it exactly as we planned. So listen, don't be surprised if a week or two from now Ruby Riott says exactly what we just said she was going to say. Don't be surprised if Ruby Riott says, you know, I guess I don't have any friends. I'm going to have to do this on my own and, you know, whatever. Bianca Belair and me didn't work out. It was a one-time thing, and I don't feel like I contributed or whatever. But it's too late now. You blew it. If her and Bianca Belair had a loss, it would have been perfect. But don't be surprised if they try to pull it off still. Because the WWE is always better late than never. It's a shame. It's just a shame. You could have had Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan reconcile as the Riott Squad and have a great series of matches with Bayley and Sasha that really, really could have been built up huge. And you didn't. I just don't know why. You could have had Seth Rollins damn near put out Kevin Owens' eye and only be saved by Rey Mysterio, to which Seth Rollins could have said, I came damn close to doing it to him. Wait till Sunday when I do it to you. Nobody's going to be there to save you. And you could have had Shayna Baszler clear that ring of faces and heels equally so she doesn't look like a face standing next to R-Truth saying, bring on the ninjas, I'll even up the odds for you, when she's supposed to be a heel. Three ridiculous things that hurt Monday Night Raw. But it was still a bazillion times better than SmackDown. And even with three major flaws that made me want to tear the hair right out of my head, I still give it a B-. Those three flaws, had they been corrected, had Seth Rollins won the match, or at least got disqualified and was trying to put out Kevin Owens' eye, had Shayna Baszler cleared the ring of faces and heels, and had Ruby Riott and Bianca Belair lost because of miscommunication, and Bianca Belair basically telling her, listen, go get your, you know what partner you need. I don't want nothing to do with you anymore. This would have been an A-plus show. Because nothing else was wrong. Everything else was great. But you can't make these unforced errors. You cannot make such boneheaded, chuckle-headed moves. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. And we will be back here, obviously, on Friday with the AEW NXT report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.